नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
The talks between Narada Muni and King Prachinabhairi.
Yata hi purusho balam, silasa gurum upaham, tamsakhena saadhate, tata sarva pratikriya. Sadadhate Tata Sarva Pratikriya.
Yata,
as
he certainly Purushaha,
a man,
Param, a burden, Sirasa
on the head,
Gurum,
heavy.
Udvaham,
carrying,
tam,
that.
Sakandhena,
on
the shoulder,
adhate, puts,
tata, similarly,
sarva,
all,
pratikriya,
counteractions. Translation of purport by Mr. Vairagya Srila Prabhupada. A man may carry a burden on his head, and when he feels it is too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting this burden on his shoulder. In this way, he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the same burden from one place to another. Purport by His Divine Grace of Prabhupada. This is a good description of an attempt to transfer a burden from one place to another. Will? Okay, is there something that... have you got a screwdriver that can just tighten this up?
Oh, I tried, it has become loose and needs to be changed.
Huh? It was? Like that, is okay? Alright. Alright?
Yeah.
Okay. When he gets tired of keeping a burden on his head, he will place it on his shoulder. This does not mean that he has become freed from the strains of carrying the burden. Similarly, human society in the name of civilization is creating a kind of trouble to avoid another kind of trouble. This is amazing at this time. In contemporary civilization, we see that there are many automobiles manufactured to carry us swiftly from one place to another, but at the same time, we have created other problems. We have to construct so many roads, and yet these roads are so insufficient to cope with automobile congestion and traffic jams. There are also the problems of air pollution and fuel shortage. The conclusion is that the process we manufacture to counteract or minimize our distresses do not actually put an end to our pains. It is simply illusion. We simply place the burden from the head to the shoulder. The only real way we can minimize our problems is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give ourselves up to His protection. The Lord, being all-powerful, can make arrangements to mitigate our painful life and material existence. Omagana Timuram Dasyaganandana Salakya Chakshuram Tamna Tasma Sri Guru Vainamaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhanichananda Sri Vaita Gadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Wow, how pertinent is this? Carrying the burden. A man may carry a burden on his head. But when he feels it is too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting the burden on his shoulders. In this way, he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the burden on the same place to it, from one place to another. So the world is a place of burden, heavy burden. And devotional service, and another switch to that, is devotional service is a burden of love. While we're in this material world, there is always burden. It's never truer than now. The world is laden with a very heavy burden. And the news is riddled with sad news. Whenever you contact anybody, it's like really sad news, you know. I was recently on a conference call with my colleagues, my communications colleagues, internationally. And they were describing what's happening. We're very fortunate here in Australia, actually. They were describing what's going on in other parts of the world. London in particular has really been hit hard. And the devotees there are also coming down with this virus, which is really sad. So, but in the light of all that, you know, there's also the burden of love. The devotees in this age at the moment are also taking on the mantle of actually helping people. And Yudhisthira Prabhu, who's my colleague in India, he was saying that how now they're distributing over 12 million plates of prasadam since the 16th of April. The devotees there in India have distributed all over India. It will be now over 12 million plates of prasadam. So this is a massive, you know, task to do, a massive job. So they're doing it. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna declares that his teachings, jnanam uttamam, they are the great strength, they are the supreme of all knowledge. The highest wisdom that which many great souls have attained, and once they've attained this, they have this relief, they are no longer burdened by anything material. No more old age, no more disease, no more death, no more difficulties, because they've relieved themselves of this material burden. The real problem in the world is actually suffering. This place is, in fact, nothing but suffering. It's one problem after another. In fact, our whole lives are always fearing some sort of suffering is going to befall us. It's for the materialist. They're constantly thinking, you know, well, you know, they know from, we know from the Shastras, Abraham, Abhinaloka, every place, anywhere in this universe is a place of misery. This material world is really a place of suffering. And fear is the thing that's driving and motivating people. I mean, we can see now in today's society, everybody is so fearful of contracting this disease, this virus. And, you know, everybody is wearing masks, and we also, as devotees, we're being sensible, and we're also being very mindful. But people are in the grip of fear all the time. Even if it wasn't at this time of the coronavirus, where people are still in the grip of fear. And why does the materialist actually do? You know, what does he actually do because of this fear? There's fear of different ways. Fear is manifested itself in all facets of material life. From the moment we wake up, you know, the materialist is actually fearing. Still fearing, you know, have I still got a job? Is my insurance policy up to date? Is my superannuation still okay? You know, they check everything. You know, why is that? Because why do they check their insurance policy? Because if something happens, am I covered? Fear of not being covered. Fear of the superannuation policy going down, because if I retire, will I have enough money to survive? Fear in so many ways, even in subtle ways. We build a house so we fear, you know, that we won't be damaged by the elements of nature. There's so many different things. And now also we have this thing where we're fearful of this virus. In society, we create a police force, we create an army, because we fear there's going to be oppression, there's going to be people that are going to do things to us. So it's riddled with fear. And sometimes this burden of fear becomes too much for the materialist. And so they have to have something else to actually divert their attention away from this burden of fear. And they construct things that take their mind away from it. And at this point in time, you see that actually people are becoming more and more fearful, because a lot of these avenues for deviating themselves or directing themselves away from fear have been taken away from them. Like, one of the greatest distractions to the burden of life is sport. You know, so people just absorb themselves in the footy team or the Olympics or something to deviate their mind away from the suffering that they're going through. And now that's been taken away from them. The cinemas have been taken away from them. The theatres have been taken away from them. Going to the pub, I mean, people are so frustrated and so fearful and so burdened by material nature that they feel they have to go to a pub, a hotel to drink at the end of the day. And that's the only way I can get through the day, by going to the pub and getting intoxicated. So all these things have been taken away from them. So now you have all these people sitting in their homes in social isolation, developing more and more fear. And it's manifesting in so many different ways, you know. People are becoming so engrossed in fear, and they start thinking of all these different things, more fearful. You know, it's a conspiracy theory, it's this. They're out to get us, they're going to do this to us. Just fearful. So there's nothing to distract them anymore, they just have to be completely absorbed in this fear. So this is the burden of life. And we as devotees are immune to that to some extent, but even you see sometimes with the devotees, and I was making a comment yesterday, how devotees are becoming absorbed with these conspiracy theories. Even devotees that you would think would not necessarily be swayed by this sort of stuff, you know, and get on with the business of just being a devotee, chanting their rounds nicely, listening to kirtan. Who cares? Really, what's happening in this material world? Who's controlling this world? Who's doing what? Our job is to get out of this place of misery. To get out of this cesspool of suffering. You know, that's our job. And that's the knowledge that we've been given. So this is that knowledge of Jnanam Uttamam. Perfect knowledge that Krishna has given in Bhagavad Gita, that we don't belong here. We are a fish out of water. So recently I've been reading, and I actually, you know, Prabhupada gives such a fantastic purport in this, you know, that he shows us how one problem leads to another problem, leads to another problem, leads to another problem. And so is the case at the moment with what we're going through. It's one problem that's led to another problem, that's led to another problem, and eventually we've got the coronavirus, which is here. Anyway, we have to shift the load. We have to also shift the load to spiritual consciousness. As I was saying, at the moment I'm reading from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita, which is a really wonderful section of the Bhagavatam. And there's a part there about the Avanti Brahmana. Everybody read that story of the Avanti Brahmana? It's a really amazing story. So, just briefly, he was a mendicant, a merchant, and from the city of Avanti. And even while he was being attacked by wicked men, considering his troubles and consequences of his own past deeds and tolerating it, it was with the utmost sobriety. So he had good consciousness to be in. So this was the whole... What happened was, previously, he was an extremely greedy, lusty, prone to anger sort of fellow. He was a merchant, an agriculturalist, he had accumulated a lot of money. And as a result, he was really nasty to his wife, his sons, his relatives, his servants, and were all deprived of any kind of enjoyment. He was really miserly, he kept everything. And hence, they fell out of affection for him. They were totally unaffectionate to him. And in due course of time, his total wealth was plundered by thieves and also by the relatives. And he fell into a deep depression, a deep renunciation. He felt that the burden of his wealth, you know, what he had accumulated, had given rise to 15 unwanted items. 15 unwanted items. having so much material baggage, you know, when you have so much material fear and holding and everything, these are the things that come from it. And the 15 different unwanted items were, number one was thievery, violence, lying, deception, lust, anger, pride, feverishness, disagreement, hatred, distrust, conflict, attachment to the opposite sex, gambling and intoxication. So these were the things that he felt were the burden of his wealth, the burden of attaining so much material matter. When this meditation arose in his heart, the Brahmana was determined to engage the duration of his remaining life in worshipping Lord Krishna. So he actually took Triyantandi Sannyas. And this is really amazing. He was a guy who was just really into materialism, and all of a sudden he was destitute because everything was plundered from him. Now somehow, by Krishna's mercy, he got the understanding that this was actually mercy, and he could actually become a renunciate. Very rare. So somehow he got Krishna's mercy. He was a very fortunate personality. Somewhere in that whole scenario, he must have been a devotee of Krishna. He must have associated with a devotee of Krishna, and somehow he picked up that this was what he should be doing. So at that time, when he became a sannyasi, he used to wander through the earth. He'd just be, you know, traveling, and he would be very renounced and begging charity in different villages and so on and so forth. And he didn't care so much for his outward appearance, and consequently the ruffians of a particular village would pick on him, and they would do all sorts of nasty things to him. And if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam in that section, it's quite disgusting what they did to this poor boy. But he was completely oblivious to it all. Even when the insults by those low-class men fixing his resolution on the mode of goodness, he just, no, it doesn't matter, he could tolerate it. He began to chant the following verse of Bhagavad Gita. This was his verse. O son of Krita, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadfastness by yoga practice, and thus controls the mind and the acts of senses, is in the mode of goodness. So that's in Bhagavad Gita 18:33. So that's that last part that Krishna is saying. So the sannyasi simply tolerated the insults that these people were giving him, because he said it didn't matter. He was completely absorbed in Krishna. So generally an individual is hurt. You know, there's actually that saying, and I mentioned it yesterday actually. The tongue can hurt more than the fist. So the insults that were sprayed at him, didn't affect him. But sometimes the tongue, if we can be venomous to somebody, you know, can actually hurt more and deeply and last longer than the fist if somebody punches you. But not for him, not for the Brahmana. He was determined, he cannot be moved, he was like a mountain, he wouldn't be shifted. And so that was his spiritual practice. He remained fixed in that spiritual practice until he went back home, back to Godhead, until he reached the lotus feet of Krishna. And he sings a song, a renowned song called the Bhikshu Gita. And in that it describes the great burden of our mind. The greatest burden that we carry with us is our mind. Our mind is such an obstacle for us. There's so many times we can think we can conquer so many things, but our mind is like the greatest thing that really bears down on us. In that section, he describes the mind as God-like power of the mind. It's like the mind is so powerful, it's like God. You know, we think we can control the mind, but actually the mind controls us. So in the Uddhava Gita, Lord Krishna tells Uddhava that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate personal insults. So if somebody is criticizing us, we can take it. You know, like the Brahmana, you can take it. Whatever you throw at me, yes, it's true. I'm in this position because of my past actions. I don't care what you do to me, it's fine. But a devotee also can't tolerate offences against Krishna or against his spiritual master. So this is really an important thing. We cannot tolerate. And what do? If we hear insults about our guru or about Krishna, we simply move away. There are many, many different things we can do, but the most The genial thing to do is to just move from that area. So the burden of the material world is lifted off the shoulders of the devotee of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada tells a story about the material world. There's this really interesting story we've heard it time and time again. And it's also something they used to do in old England. The king, if he wanted to punish a particular fellow for a crime that they had committed, there was a thing called dunking. You know, and this Prabhupada gives this analogy to actually show you how people enjoy the material world. So this dunking was, you'd get two heavy, big, heavy set soldiers, and they would strap this person onto a plank, and then they would submerge him in the water of a river or whatever, and then he would be struggling for him to hold his breath, and just as he was about to lose consciousness, they would pop him back up again, and he'd take a breath. And then, you know, just as he took a breath, they'd do it again, and again, and again. And Prabhupada points out that whenever they let him up, that little gasp of freedom, of, oh, freedom, is exactly like us in the material world, you know. There's a little bit of pleasure in the material world, and then bang, pain again. So for a few seconds, the actual pleasure in this material world is only fleeting. It's only a very temporary thing. When we feel relief from the anxieties and frustrations, burdens and agitations of the material world, we call that enjoyment. When we get a little bit of relief. Lord Krishna says that the highest knowledge, as I said, was Jnanamuttamam, and it's that which once and for all releases us from the suffering of this material world. In fact, they teach that it's more sophisticated, like in the colleges and everything, they teach us that somehow or other we can make an end to the miseries of this material world, but actually they're not teaching anything. They're really only constructing different ways to alleviate the suffering. So the shifting of burden is not responsible, no responsibility for their actions in the first place. Srila Prabhupada gives this analogy of the car. And how, you know, Prabhupada says here, we have constructed so many cars and we've constructed roads for them, and yet these roads are insufficient to cope with air pollution, with fuel shortage. The conclusion is that the process we manufacture to counterize and minimize our distresses do not actually put an end to our pains. So this pain is really an interesting thing, you know, it's such a fleeting thing. Pain and enjoyment are two fleeting things. Pain lasts for a long time, and enjoyment only lasts for a brief time. If you've ever noticed, anything that's pleasurable only lasts for a very short period of time. You know, like say, for example, you go through the whole process of cooking a delicious meal, right? And you get all the ingredients, and for a long time you're cooking and everything, and then you actually have the plate in front of you, offered and everything, and then you finally taste. That taste only lasts a little bit, right, in your mouth. It's just a very short time. Ah, that's pleasure. If in the same token, say for example, you have a toothache or a pain or something, or a blister or something in your mouth, that pain in the same area will last for a long, long time. Similarly, if you touch something and it feels really nice and soft, that only lasts for a very short time. And then if somebody cuts their finger and it becomes infected, that same finger, the pain will last a lot longer. So that's the nature of the material world. Sometimes if pain is longer and enjoyment is just a fleeting little thing. This is the same with sex life. You know, we go through so much endeavor to elicit sexual engagement, the pleasure is only, and then it's finished. So this is the material world. So we have to shift the responsibility. You have to shift that burden. And it's interesting. So this Avanti Brahmana actually must have had somehow or other the association of the devotee. And which I thought about something yesterday, which was really, in a sense, it's very sad. Because a very dear friend of the devotees has found out that he has cancer and he has a limited time to live. This man has had association with the devotees on a professional basis for at least the last 35 years. When we were doing paraphernalia sales, he provided us with paintings and framing and everything. And I, as Sankirtan leader, would, you know, deal with him on a business level. He was a Jewish man. He is a Jewish man. And over the years, he became more and more connected with the devotees. You know, Josh. So he told me yesterday that the cancer, he had tests all this week, and apparently it's terminal. He will pass away. So, but this man, it was just, to me, I just started to think about his life, you know, and he had so many burdens. I've known him for those 35 years, you know, and he was always struggling with his business. He was always endeavoring this and that. But in the back of his mind, due to the association with the devotees, he slowly started to understand the greater aspects of life, even in his own faith tradition. I mean, he's Jewish, but he still had a real soft spot for the Hare Krishna movement. And he still does. He loves prasadam. He loved prasadam. And over the years, he became vegetarian again. You know, from his point of view, it was for health reasons, but again, it was that connection. And he really appreciated coming to the temple and seeing the deities and calling on the name of God every time he saw him. And when he was calling me and telling me about his situation, every communication was always Hare Krishna. He did so much for the devotees and has done so much for the devotees and will continue as long as he's alive to do things for the devotees. You know, when we do the auctions and everything, he's the one that produces those beautiful prints and frames. All the frames that you see here in the temple room, he did them. And he does it for a fraction of the price that we would get anywhere else. Prabhu Das would always go to him for framing. You know, and a lot of the times he would do things for nothing. You know, just, oh no, this is my service to Krishna. So, he's very sad. It's very sad in the sense that this is happening to him. And I said to him, well, Josh, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to take some treatment? He said, no, I want to die in dignity. I want to die in dignity. I don't want to take on these sort of different, whether he changes his mind or not, that's another thing. But he said, Krishna's now given me the end of my life. And at this time, I just want to surrender to God and do God's will. This is amazing, you know. So the power of an association with the devotee is not to be taken for granted, you know. So he struggled his whole life, and yet he served Krishna, loved prasadam, cared for the devotees, and Krishna looks after him with knowledge, that real knowledge, that this is all futile, this material world. So besides this inferior energy, this inferior nature, this is Bhagavad Gita 7.5, Almighty Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mind, which are all the living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. This material creation is consistent of 8 elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And they are objects of miseries or burdens because they're all temporary. Anything in this material world is temporary. It's fleeting. It's will of the wisp. It's just gone, come here one time, gone the next. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the non-permanent appearance of pleasure and pain, those little things, are like the passing of winter and summer seasons. It just goes. Just everything passes. So we know whatever pleasure you derive from the senses, how long they last. It's just so, so small. So pleasure and pain are very flickering things. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dukhayayam Ashashvatam, the nature of the material world is suffering and no one can change that. So Krishna explains, after attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries because they have attained the highest perfection. There are those in the material world, materially minded, whose burden of life is if you can imagine, the materialist with his burden is like a big heavy rock that they're pushing up a hill. And no matter what they do, the rock never gives. They have to continue pushing this rock all the way to the top of the hill. And the hill is never ending. If they relax at any stage, the rock starts rolling back on them. So they become tired, This is like a burden of life. And if they let it roll over them, then it crushes them. So this is the nature of the material world. The material world will crush them. So we have to do work in service to Krishna. So the burden that we take on is not material burden, but spiritual burden. This is what is incumbent upon us. There has to be transcendental burden. There has to be a dedication to serving the Lord in everything that we do. Even the work that we do every day should be done as a service to God. We are not these material bodies, we're spirit souls. And we have an opportunity to actually serve God by doing work for Him according to the needs of the soul. The need of the soul is to actually be free from this material world. He wants to get out and reconnect with Krishna. So that's yoga, that we come back to Krishna and connect with Krishna. That's the spiritual burden. A spiritual burden is the perfect example of a spiritual burden or transcendental burden is the life of Srila Prabhupada. How he actually took on so much to actually bring Krishna consciousness to another, to us, to the world. And then, apart from just bringing this knowledge to us, he also took on the discipleship of so many of fallen people, getting the association and also the spiritual nourishment for them to actually make rapid advancement in their Krishna consciousness. So we have to immerse ourselves in service somehow or another. This is what's asked of us. And again, we also have to then take on that spiritual burden. As the spiritual master has said, you know, as I'm taking on the burden, it is also your responsibility to take on the burden. If you have found out the truth of Krishna consciousness, then you should also take on that burden. And as we see, you know, his disciples, so many disciples are now taking on the burden of other living entities, you know, and becoming guru and teaching. But we in our own way also have to be gurus, have to be teachers, and encourage people in their devotional life to mitigate their burden of life, to mitigate their suffering. That's our responsibility. And sometimes we can say that burden is also heavy, difficult, but we do it, and the results of doing that service is actually uplifting. If we can give something to someone, it is uplifting. So many times we have a situation where we've actually extended ourselves, gone out of our way to actually bring Krishna consciousness to someone, and we see the results when that person actually starts to turn from materialistic consciousness to spiritual consciousness and start reciprocating with you and appreciating the knowledge that has been given to them. Just as in the case of Josh, you know, he was so appreciative of the connection with the devotees, and it changed his life like that. So real compassion, and there's that same burden of love. We all have to be teachers, and we have to give the burden of love. Love is the thing. Compassion is what we need. Compassion is the real need of the soul, other living entities, and to cure someone of the disease of the burden and ignorance of material life. So in this period of social isolation, we sometimes think, well, there's not much I can actually do. I'm stuck here at the temple. I'm stuck in my home. What can I actually do to influence other people? What can I do to serve Krishna? There are many things. We have to use our intelligence to actually think of different ways that we can actually still progress and push on Krishna consciousness and affect people's lives by giving them Krishna consciousness. And one way we can do that is to actually look at our lives and see what can we do. Again, the internet is a wonderful thing if we use it in Krishna service. If we have a series of friends or something, maybe we can reach out to them more, offer some Krishna conscious advice. In my situation, in my own personal situation, because of the service that I do, I have connection with a lot of people from government, a lot of people from interfaith, all the different faith traditions, and I have a lot of people that are involved with chaplaincy, spiritual care. That's my service. And I was thinking, okay, how can I actually outreach to these people? Because generally, when I was doing my service on a physical level, I could interact with people and talk to them about Krishna consciousness. But now that that is completely stopped with this isolation, I'm thinking, how can I actually communicate with these people and still pass on a spiritual message? So I started, and I got an inspiration actually from a Christian website that has a daily inspirational thing, right? So I think I've got around about 1,500, no more, over 2,000 people that are on my Facebook friend page. And so what I'm doing is it's like a daily outreach to them, some aspect of God consciousness. Not overly, overtly Krishna conscious, you know, like not a Hare Krishna type of presentation, but in a way, a subtle way of bringing up a topic of life and encouraging them to be more spiritual, be more godly, to lessen their burden, so to speak. And the reaction that I've been getting from people, devotees have liked it as well, but the people that I'm concentrating on are people that are not necessarily anything to do with Krishna consciousness. And the reaction that I'm getting has been really amazing, how people have reacted to those little inspirational reflections and meditations and prayers. So I'm really enthused by that. And again, it may be that it could be perceived as a burden to do something like that. You actually have to sit, work out how you can actually present something to them in a way that's palatable. But it works. So each one of us, somehow or other, has to think of ways in which we can actually help someone. I got a call from Swinburne University recently that they're looking at somehow or other providing meals for people in need, the international students, and they're wondering, can the devotees do something in that way? The meal distribution that we have happening here at the moment, you know, how can we expand on that? How can we make that grow more? You know, okay, it's a bit of a burden to actually cook and everything, but the kudos and the respect that the devotees get for doing that service is amazing. Even now, with the amount that we're doing, I'm getting calls from members of parliament, from people in the Hindu community. Yes, Prabhu?
Police has come out, so they are talking to someone. In case if they come inside, can we
spread out?
Yeah, spread out.
The police are here?
Yeah, they are.
Do they want to come in? Okay.
In case if they want to
just,
come in,
yeah, give it that. It's another burden of the material world. So, is everybody fearful? Krishna protects us. So anyway, this is what we can think of helping other people, you know, in different ways. We'll just wait for them to come in. I hope they take their shoes off. Maybe not. Anyway, just welcome them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting part of the class. So today also is an Ekadasi, as we know. And an Ekadasi means that there's a little bit of a burden for us on that as well, that we have to refrain from eating grains. But that's not a challenge for us. You know, sometimes the devotees complain, oh, it's Ekadasi. But actually, for me, it's always like, wow, it's something different. You know, and it's actually very uplifting. And so, we have to think of ways, and that's what I was thinking. The material world is full of burdens. And it's our duty, each and every one of us, that we somehow or other do something to alleviate the burdens of the fallen conditioned souls. So even if we're in isolation, we have to think of ways that we can somehow reach them. I don't know how. I found my little niche, and it's a really nice sort of thing. But people have to think in their own way. You know, maybe somebody has connections at the university. You know, how can I reach out to those people that I haven't seen for so long? You know, we do the university class, the talks and stuff. How can I reach out to them? How can I reach out to my relatives? It was really interesting, you know, because I have tried so long to try and get my relatives interested in Krishna consciousness. When I did this thing, you know, in my little so-called presentation on different aspects of life and spirituality, that was the first time that my relatives actually contacted me and said, oh, that was really nice. You should do this every day. You know? And I've been for 40 years, I've been trying to reach out to them and present Krishna consciousness, But because it was this isolation time, and their home, and they see, oh, what is Bert doing? You know, because that's my Western name. Oh, what's Bert doing? You know, and they were appreciative. So there are many different things that we can do. We have to exercise our brain. How can we really make a difference to society, even while we're in this situation? That one of the things that I was pointing out at one of the presentations that I made was about helping other people. And even if during this period of isolation we get an opportunity to actually call someone that we haven't spoken to for a long time, go through a list of old friends, because they're all home. They're not anywhere else. We'll go through a list of old friends and say, hi, this is such and such, and I haven't talked to you for a long time. I just thought of you today. How are you? You know, and start breaking the barriers and getting some communication again happening. This is an interesting time that we can do these things. The other thing is that a lot of the devotees now are developing their own personal skills as far as being better devotees when this whole thing is over. You know, there are different Bhakti Shastri courses that are doing this. Narahari Priya and his wife and a couple of other devotees are doing this thing from Mumbai, where there's this personal assessment thing on a devotional sort of basis. There are so many different things that we can do to actually become more able to present Krishna consciousness when this is all over. So somehow or another we have to think of this and take on this transcendental burden, to do what we can to really accentuate, you know, what we're capable of doing. I'll stop here. I haven't got much more to say. Has anybody got any comments or questions at all? Can you think of anything that you could do that may make a difference? How can we influence these police people that are here at the moment? Just by
general, give them some maharsha.
Give them maharsha. Really good. Yeah. How is the food distribution going on?
Yeah, it's going good.
What's happening so far?
Yesterday we need 36 people.
How many?
36.
Yeah. So it's rising every day.
It's rising every day. Yeah.
How are we going with Father Bob?
Father Bob, we gave them everything.
The flyers?
Yeah. So.
Okay.
And we are in touch with some other charity organization. They want to meet in a bulk, like 50, 100, 200 people.
Wow.
So we are working on that.
Okay. Yeah, as I said, Swinburne University has also asked if we could provide meals for the international students there. So, if we can, it'd be great. Mm-hmm. You know?
We can send a flyer, so if any some students leave this area, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, that's great. So, Prabhupada, this is a difficult time for all of us, but in a sense, you know, we can struggle through it with a spiritual burden and continue on. So the only thing that was left for us to do is to serve Krishna nicely and chant the holy name. And it was so nice to come here today. It's amazing how you lose that connection, you know. And you never lose the connection, but when you come back here, it's like when we used to do Sankirtan. And you used to travel for a long period of time, well, you know, right? And then you come back to home, back to base, and you see the beautiful deities, and your heart is just filled, you know, and you see the devotees. Like, quite frankly, you know, I see the devotees and I want to hug each and every one of you. I said to somebody the other day, you know, when this is all over, we are going to have the best kirtan you could ever possibly imagine. The devotees are just going to be in ecstasy. They're going to hug each other. They're going to dance with each other. You know, they're going to feast with each other. It's actually, you know, that austerity of separation is actually making us more determined to love one another. You know? It's just amazing how that's happening. So, I mean, I'm just so honored to be here. I'm home. It's like every day is exactly the same. You wake up at 5 o'clock and you do your RT, you do this and you go, and next thing, have breakfast. And There's nothing new happening. Everything is on Zoom. You know, Zoom is my best friend at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I have one Zoom meeting after the next Zoom meeting. It's like one to the government, one to this one, one to that one. It's just amazing. Anyway, Prabhupada, thank you very much. Any comments or questions at all? Thank you. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.